Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome, and joining me today to share the stories behind the 10 books that influenced him the most on his life journey is former ABC radio and TV presenter and newsreader, qualified astrologer and intuitive counsellor Barry Eaton, who hosts the fabulous and highly popular internet radio program and podcast Radio Out There. Barry has studied mediumship at the Arthur Findlay College in the UK, and he's a well-known writer who's scripted and narrated many documentary films, corporate presentations, and written numerous feature stories for magazines and newspapers on his areas of expertise in astrology, entertainment, travel, and spirituality. He also works as a media and presentation skills trainer, narrator, MC, and a keynote speaker. And Barry is the author of 4 books, including No Goodbyes, Life-Changing Insights from the Other Side, and his first book, which is a classic among spiritual readers across the world, Afterlife, Uncovering the Secrets of Life After Death. Barry Eaton, welcome.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I know. Who is that person?
Yeah, I didn't realize about all that. Yeah, I did. Lovely to see you. Lovely to talk to you again.
You too. And, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that sometimes we have to hear someone else reading our bio to go, oh, yeah, I did that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's just life to us.
Yeah, well, some of it was a few years ago, but, well, it's a lifelong journey, isn't it, that we're all on.
And you've had a fascinating one. I mean, you've met so many people through the years of emceeing some incredible conferences and events. And I think you must have been one of the first people, radio out there. You started that how many years ago?
Well, I started on mainstream radio here in Sydney, Australia, back about the turn of the century, really. It was earlier than that. It was 1997. And then I switched radio stations, and then things started to go a bit haywire technically. So a friend of mine, Duncan Rhodes, who's the editor and publisher of Nexus magazine, said, well, why don't you just put it on the internet? So I did. So 2003, the program went on the internet, and 18 years later, here we are.
And you started a trend. Podcasts are going crazy now.
Yeah, I'm glad I got in the early stages, Sandy. Yeah. Of course, yeah. You and I have known each other for a long time. You've been a guest on Radio Out There several times.
I have. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's great.
Yeah.
For me to be able to be a guest on your program.
I know. So let's talk about books. I mean, you're like me. You obviously have a massive, massive library. You could open up a public library if you wanted to. And you read hundreds and hundreds of books. So tell me, how easy or how challenging was it for you to pick just 10?
Oh, Sandy, honestly, I had to try and think there's a bit of a story or it's influenced me or inspired me or something in some way or changed my life or whatever, because there are so many others. I mean, narrowing it down to 10 was not easy, I've got to say, but each one of those books has had an impact on my life. So, but it took a bit of thinking about.
I'm sure.
Well, some of them I hadn't read for ages and ages, so.
Yeah. And I think the whole thing is, I mean, some of those books that if we read them now, we'd say, yeah, you know, been there, done that. But of course, at the time, they made such a big impact.
Yeah, they do. And yet, just before coming on the program, I went back and opened a few books that I hadn't opened for ages. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Oh, I'd forgotten about that. Because there's so much that you do when you're doing a show and interviewing people all the time. So it's... You can only access so much information straight into the mind, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say the minute the show is finished, the book disappears. It falls out of one ear and the next one comes in. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
So books, obviously, I mean, you're passionate about books. You have a massive library. I mean, that started when you were very young, didn't it?
It did. Oh, yes. I mean, as a young boy, I did all the Biggles books and the Enid Blyton books and anything. If ever somebody gave me 10 shillings or whatever it was for my birthday or Christmas, I'd be rushing out to the nearest bookstore to buy something. So, and that included comic books when I was very young as well. So reading has always been something that it's just part of life to me and an important part of life.
Yeah. So at what point on your journey did you start waking up?
You mean spiritually? It happened in the 80s. It started, 1980s. I was doing a talk back or show on radio here in Australia, on commercial radio in Sydney. And I started to interview a couple of people. First of all, a guy, Mark Kruner, who was well known in the States at that stage as a numerology expert. And Mark came on the program. And when you're doing a callback, as you know, you open the lines and bingo, away they go. Sometimes people don't ring in. As soon as Mark came on, even announcing him beforehand, the lines would just go berserk. So then that expanded out and Mark introduced me to an astrologer. So I had him on the program, and then a psychic contacted me. So I had her on the program. So I had regular guests as well as all my other guests as well. But each time I had one of those guests, the lights on the switchboard just went bing, you know, and away they went. So it started to intrigue me, and I wanted to learn more and more. But then in 1990, I had the classic transformation time. Astrologically, there are many planets involved. Domestically, it's just called divorce. So I did that. My life changed, and I told Gary Wiseman, who was the astrology guy on the program, I'm going to do your course next year. And he said, what? You're going to do what? I said, yeah. He said, where did that come from? I said, I don't know. I just decided to study astrology next year. That was the turning point, Sandy. I studied astrology, also then involved tarot, and I learned, sort of changed my whole life there. And I know in England you have the Mind-Body-Spirit Festivals, just as we have here. And I was walking through the Mind-Body-Spirit Festival where my teacher ran the whole psychic thing one day, and he just said to me, oh, thank heavens you're here. Quick, I'm desperate. Come and do some readings for me. I said, what? What do you mean come and do some readings for you? I'm just walking around having a look. He said, no, we need you. We need you. I said, I haven't got any cards. Here's mine. And I said, oh, well, what? He said, sit at that table. Next thing I know, there's somebody coming up, sitting down, looking at me expectantly to do a radio, to do a reading for them. And I just finished reading the news for 4 hours on radio, or 5 hours or whatever it was. I think, oh, my God. So fortunately, my guides came in there and helped me. And my first professional reading was actually at a Mind, Body, Spirit Festival. These days, you've got to audition to even get a spot on them. So I think the universe gave me a pretty clear message then. And it all unfolded from there.
I love the metaphor that the lights went on figuratively and literally in your life.
That's so true. Well, they'd gone on in studios, TV studios, and that in a very different way, Sandy, as you know.
Yeah. So let's talk about your books. And I know that you have an enormous interest in the unseen, the afterlife. And your very first book is Journey of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton. So tell us when you came across that and what kind of influence it had on you.
Well, it had a life-changing influence, really, because at that stage in the late 90s when I first discovered the book, or the book discovered me, I had just been recovering. I was just recovering from the passing of my partner, Judy, who we'd only been together 4 years, and we just knew that we had a huge soul connection. And then unexpectedly, she passed away. And I was working with a medium. I'd started my program at this stage from Judy's place. And I had and it was going out on commercial radio, but from the dining room, which I believe, just as they would do these days. And one of the guests was a medium, and she came and helped me with speech that I gave at the funeral and whatever. And then a few months later, she contacted me and said, oh, would you like to speak to Judy? And I said, well, yes, I'd love to, but she only passed a few months ago. She said, yep, well, she's here, ready to speak to you. Do you want to come in? So I did. And I made an appointment, went along, and when I got to her house, here she was standing at the front door tip, 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 tap, 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 you know, where are you? I've got a whole room full of people waiting for you. I said, what? What do you mean a room full of people? So I went in looking around thinking, you know, who's going to be here? Was it an audience or something? The room, I couldn't see a soul, but of course the room was full of souls. They happened to be Judy. They happened to be many different people. And when I connected with Judy, after that, we were given permission, long story short here, given permission to keep connecting. And that opened my medium skills from then on. I've been doing some automatic writing, but that really opened things up for me. And my life really did a big, big transformation, transformation number two, really. So shortly after this, I'm recovering from the whole incident of Judy's passing. It wasn't an incident, was it? It was a catastrophic event in my life anyway. And the old classic thing happened. Book fell off the shelf. And it's this book here. Whoops, over there. Yes. Journey of Souls and Case Studies of Life Between Lives, Michael Newton, PhD. And I thought, oh, that looks interesting. At that stage, it was 1997, and shortly after he'd published it. Over 100,000 copies sold, it says on my copy here, bought it in 97, okay? Now there's over 1 million copies sold. And when I went in there, it just explained so much to me, Sandy. It explained what happens in the immediate aftermath of one's passing, the transition. And it just got me in, and I just knew that I was being spoken to from the other side, that spirit was really getting in touch with me and giving me the path, because we've been given permission to connect. And I mean, there are so many things that I hadn't even thought about. And as I was reading the book again, just before a day or so before we going on air here, I flicked it open and like, I haven't really read the book in years and years and years. And I opened it and it just flicked open at a page. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And they were talking about the colors of souls in the afterlife. Now, we don't think about the color of souls. And I'd forgotten all about this until I actually opened the book again. And there are various stages we go through. The beginner stage, where the color of the soul is, or spirit, is white. And then they go to the lower intermediate. That's off-white, a bit of reddish shades may be involved. Then level three is intermediate, yellow. And then after that, level four is upper intermediate, which is a sort of a dark yellow, like a gold color. And by the time you get to there, you're a junior guide. Then we go to advanced, which is light blue, a senior guide. And the master guides are level six, highly advanced, dark bluish purple, surrounded by radiant light. Now, I'd forgotten all about that since that time. Now, that's just indicative of so many things in this particular book. And it had such an influence on me, I really wanted to continue on, because we'd started the program just before Judy passed away. And we were doing it live on Sunday morning radio, actually on commercial radio. And it just took me to the next stage. And that had a profound influence on my life. That's why the list I gave you is not necessarily in order of importance. It just was one of those that jumped into my mind straight away. So, but it does rank number one because it had such a life-changing effect on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, unlike many guests, you actually stuck to the rules. Most people, if they've got two books by an author or more books by an author, they try to sneak them in and expand their list to about 15. But your second book, you didn't do that. You didn't put the second book in with the first. It is separate, and it is Destiny of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton.
Well, that's right, because that I got such a lot out of Journey of Souls. When Destiny of Souls came out in 2001, I saw it in the bookshop. And I thought, oh, I've got to have it. So I did. And when I opened it again, it's a brand new copy. I don't think I've opened it. So I read it in about 2001. And once again here, I just flipped it open. And there was a chapter on the Council of Elders. And once it traces the journey that we go in afterlife, okay? And when we get over there, people sort of think, I'm going to go into judgment. There's going to be the wrath of God. This old man sitting on a chair is going to start chucking down thunderbolts at me or whatever. Well, of course, that's all dismissed by Michael Newton, who did something like 7,000 to 8,000 different regressions with people and took them through into life between lives and whatever. And the Council of Elders, they're the ones who we go back and we have a chat. Now, the Council of Elders don't sort of sit there and in judgment and say, yes, well, I can see that in 1958 you did such and such. Guilty. You know, there's none of that nonsense. You look back. It's like at the end of a football game or a cricket game or something where you're looking back at the replay of various events, and you can then analyse it and realise and sometimes find that the hurt that you have given, wittingly or unwittingly, you can relive it and have that experience. And that struck home with me as well. Now, all of these things, and that's just one of the things in Destiny of Souls. So there, I'll put that up there on the screen as well. Okay, Destiny of Souls. That came out as the sequel to Journey of Souls. So once again, that was sort of like being a sequel. It was stage two of my Michael Newton education. And later on, many years later, I had a very big connection with Michael Newton, although not in person, but I'll tell you about that a bit later.
Okay. Before we go on to number three, I do have a question for you. You said something when you were talking about the first book that you and Judy were given permission to communicate. Why do you need permission?
To communicate as a medium. I was told that by the medium that I've been working with, and she said, spirit has said, you have, you know, it's okay. They're my words. They didn't say, yes, you have permission, here is your certificate, but they sort of said, yes, it's okay, and they gave me a little signal that I could tinkle this little bell suddenly, you know, and that was 1998. Well, I've got way, way beyond that now. So we weren't officially given permission, you know, it wasn't God's blessing or something, it was the guides who were just telling us that.
Okay. So number three is In Search of Lives Past by Peter Ramstad. And you say this book is now out of print, which will upset many people, I'm sure, once you've spoken about it.
It will, because it is a wonderful book. Now, Peter, I met when I was on commercial radio back in the late 70s. And there was a big column in a newspaper about doing past life regression. So I contacted him. He's a psychologist. And I went along to do past life regression. And I sort of fell into this black pit. And I was terrified. And I sort of pulled myself out of it. And no, I'm not going to go there. But I stayed in touch with Peter. And after a while, we became quite good friends. And he was noted at that stage for doing various work as not only a past life therapist and a psychologist, of course, until the psychology authorities clamped down on him. He was also writing dreams, and he wrote a dream column for a Sunday newspaper here. His dreams are amazing. Anyway, we started to talk about past lives, and when I started doing my first radio out there as the second title, it was another title before that. But Peter came onto the program a couple of times and was telling me various stories about his experiences, spiritual experiences. You know, when he was working in London, about working as somebody, he'd knock on the door and he'd open the door and there'd be nobody there, and he'd go away and knock, knock, knock again, and he'd pull the door open, nobody there. And then we started talking about past lives. And Peter, back in the 80s, had a film production company with his son. And they made these programs called The Reincarnation Experiment. And it was based on this book here, which, once again, In Search of Lives Past, which tragically is out of print. But if you can ever pick one up secondhand, please do. Anyway, the book was amazing because it was the forerunner of the TV series. And it really, I mean, I've always believed in past lives. I don't understand how anybody could think that we only come here once, and that you get one opportunity. If you blow that, well, that's it, you know, or else at the end of a life you just turn off the lights, all fade to black, and it's all over. I mean, that just logically doesn't even, let alone spiritually, does not equate with me. So the various stories that Peter Ramstad put out here, In Search of Lives Past, was incredible. Now, you can go on to online and pick up some various clips from The Reincarnation Experiment, even though the book is not available. And Peter talk to me about past lives and really intrigued me. And when I read this, I mean, there was one lady that he used to regress called Gwen. And Gwen was just, as Pete described her, in this lifetime, she was just an ordinary housewife. But when he put her deep down into hypnotic regression, she came alive with some incredible details, one of which was as a young woman by the name of Rose Duncan. She was in Somerset back in 1765. I think she was born and died in 1780-odd. She was only 17 or 18 when she died. But she went back to this life, and she was living near Glastonbury. And she gave incredible details about where she lived, and she even talked about, we know the Glastonbury Abbey now. Well, she referred to it as St. Michael's Abbey. And when they found out later on and they checked, they found out that Glastonbury Abbey is actually built on the site of what was known as St. Michael's Abbey. Now, nobody knew that, not even a researcher at Bristol University they talked to, historical researcher, knew that. But it was there in the records. She then, they went across with a film crew then to with Gwen and a few other people that Peter had done some regressions with to prove all of these things. And they took her back to Glastonbury. And in post-hypnotic regression, she then was able to take them to the place that she lived in at that stage as Rose Duncan. She described how she worked for Lord Salisbury, I think it was, who was the Lord of the Manor at that stage, and all sorts of various other things. But then apparently one day she went out and twisted her ankle or something, and this guy took her back, an elderly man took her back to his little house and bandaged her up and whatever. She was able to describe that house. This is back in the 1980s, you know, and about a particular tile that was there on the floor with certain markings. Now, when they went up there with the film crew, and you know, film crews are like, we love them, but they are pretty skeptical at the best of times. You know, you really got to prove things to a film crew. And they were sort of thinking, pardon me, they were thinking, all right, yeah, well, you know, go ahead, lady, prove it. So they went back in there. She described the house. They went in there and they looked at the shape. Yes, that was supposed to be a door. And it was a window today. And then they looked up and there was a lintel across the top. So it was a door originally and they'd changed that. Anyway, they finally found this house where this guy had treated her. And the tiles on the floor, it was that stage, a pretty small place in those days in the 18th century, of course. It was now a chicken shed and, of course, full of chicken droppings. So they had to clean all the chicken droppings out. And then underneath they found these tiles exactly as she had described in her hypnotic regression back in Australia the year before, including the mason's marking, the description, the colour, everything. And they were just absolutely dumbfounded, the whole lot of them. And she'd also described the fact that on the way, she was able to take them from Glastonbury, the tour at Glastonbury, through the fields. They hadn't been there in this lifetime before, never left Australia. And they could prove that. Never left Australia. But she was able to go from Glastonbury tour right down to this house, following a river. And she talked about three stepping stones, but the stepping stones weren't there. But she was able to unerringly take them to where she was born, where she lived, which was called Rose Cottage. And then she went to this house where the tiles were. And the stepping stones weren't there. Now, Peter went out, as the director of the film, went out and spoke to a local. And he said, oh, yes. He had a Somerset accent. So he talked like this, I reckon. He said, oh, yeah, them stepping stones, yeah, they was there and they got removed during the war. So there was the whole completion. Stepping stones, which nobody remembered, except the very oldest people in the community, the tile, the house, everything. So In Search of Lives Past just had such a profound impact on me and just proved to me about past lives, so much so it inspired the third part of my afterlife trilogy, which is called Past Lives Unveiled. And that was only came out about 2 years ago. And I worked with Peter. And another little story about Peter. Peter was treating Judy just as she was having a really bad time just before she passed, and he was coming in and giving us some counseling because he was coming onto my radio program and we were doing it at home, and he would see Judy, and She actually collapsed one Friday night, went into hospital, and the next day she passed. Now, Peter on the, she passed very early on a Sunday morning. And Peter on the Saturday night had a dream, which he told me about afterwards, which he said he dreamed that she was in this bed right next to a window. And at one at this stage, two angels came in through the window. Judy's spirit left the body, went up to join them, and they all turned into three doves and they flew away. That was his dream. And quite an amazing thing, because he had no way. She was in a long ward, and it could have been any one of the a bed in that ward, but she was in the bed right next to the window.
You know, I've seen that documentary. I've seen that movie on British television many, many years ago, and I remember that scene where they were sweeping away, you know, all the chicken droppings and saying, yes. Oh, it can't be here, but then there it was. There were several other really amazing instances in that documentary.
Very much. Well, in the book, they're all there. And that was just, Gwen was just one of them. Gwen had some amazing experiences, but that's for another day.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So book number four, your friend and mine, A Manual for Developing Humans by PMH Atwater.
Yeah. I worked with PMH on, I compared or MC'd the Afterlife conferences here from 2015 through till about 2019, 2020 or something. And PMH came out to one in Melbourne, and we got to be really good friends. And my partner Anne and I looked after PMH. We sat with, had dinner and all sorts of things. So we've continued that relationship. And PMH has been a guest on my radio program, Radio Out There, quite a few times. And so many people have said, oh, there's no instruction book for life. And maybe that's the case. Then in 2017, this came out, A Manual for Developing Humans. And to me, Sandy, that is the instruction, the book of life. It just answers so many questions. It took her many years to write this, and it's just amazing. It's so inspirational. So if you want to know some of the key things about life, you want to know what's going on and explain things, this is it. The answers are in there. It is packed full. Have you read the book?
I've got it. I have not read it. I've read several of her books, but I haven't read that one.
Oh, look, please, when you get time. And you don't have to read it like a novel, you know, page one right through. Mm. You can just read a chapter here and there. And because they're self-contained. And I just flipped open once again, getting ready to have a chat with you. And one of them here was Economics Investment Service. And she says, and this is part of the life. I mean, she's covering not only the spiritual, but she covers the material as well. And she's talking about the economy. And she says, a repeating economic cycle in the United States consists of four turnings of about 20 years each. With the fourth comes crisis. First timing, 46 to 64, confident expansion, leadership, new world order. Second turning, 64 to 84, awakening, spiritual exploration, rebellion, alternatives. The third turning, 84 to 2005, unraveling, growing malaise, incompetence, and deepening divisions. Fourth turning, 2005 to 2025, crisis, depression, climate of chaos, economic disasters. Now, if that doesn't sort of pick up on exactly what is happening right now, then when you go one back from the first turning I mentioned there from 46 to 64, the 20-year period before that was the end of fourth turning. So what did we have then? We had the depression, we had the lead up to the Second War, we had the rise of fascism, all of these things. So she's able to look at cycles like this, which amazing, just answers questions. She's not playing fortune teller or anything like that. She's just stating the way it is. And as you know, history repeats itself. We cannot ignore the lessons of history. We do so at our own peril. Yeah. So that's it. I mean, I couldn't tell you a lot about this because there's just so much in it. I could do Well, I did an interview with her on my own radio program on Radio Out There, and there was an hour just talking, and we only covered probably, you know,
yeah,
a quarter of the book.
I will read it. I mean, my favourite of the books that I have read of hers is Future Memory, which think is just amazing. Yes. And she tells me that people read that book every year and they get something different every time. And I likened it to a labyrinth. And it is, reading it is like walking a labyrinth because, you know, the ahas that you get from it.
Yeah. But she's like that. She's an amazing woman.
Yeah, she is.
And seeing Alive and working with Alive was brilliant. And you can see how that mind goes and the books evolve. And once again, she had a profound influence on my development at that stage, because I was sort of halfway through writing. I was just publishing my sequel to Afterlife, which is called No Goodbyes. And I was developing all sorts of things. I just recovered from, at that stage, just recovered from having cancer and was sort of getting back in terms with life again. So PMH sort of had a very profound impact on a vulnerable time in my own life. So once again, very influential.
So book number five, You'll See It When You Believe It by Dr. Wayne Dyer.
I don't need to say anything except the title.
Exactly. Yeah, I had the same reaction when I read the book.
Yeah. Well, when I first read it, once again, you know, the title says everything. It really says everything. And I interviewed Wayne back in 1998, I think it was, 1999, and amazing man, lovely man. We only did it by telephone, but he was in America at the time and I was in Australia. But it was one of the lovely interviews that I remember so well. But as I said, the title says everything. I don't need to say anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so now we move on to Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh, which doesn't come up as often as one might think it would Guests, 10 Bests.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a personal thing, though, isn't it? I mean, if you're writing about it or proposing that a certain book has an influence in your life, and you look at your library, things will jump out at you. And this was one of them. I mean, I've got the whole collection. I just pulled book one off the shelf and once again had a little look at that. And I interviewed Neil when he was in Australia too, and a very, very interesting man. And his definitions, I mean, people think of God once again as this old man with a long white beard sitting in a throne, and he dispelled that. Totally dispelled that. And I had confirmation of that in my own contacts with a group in the afterlife that I've been working with for quite some time in my books. And they said exactly the same thing, that God is not an old man sitting on the... that's the Greek god Zeus. We don't have to go down that. That's just purely an image. But God is just pure energy. And that's basically it. And quite often just referred to as the universe. And God is the universe, the multiverses, really. So that's basically it. So in his conversations with God, I don't need to go back over them because there's just so many of them. But I thought, well, if he could do it, and he inspired me on this one, I actually asked him, do you reckon I could do it? He said, well, give it a go. So I did. And when was it? 2008, I went over to Brazil to the John of God Casa in Brazil, a healing area there. And I went to some amazing experiences there, and they singled me out and made me a son of the Casa while I was there, which was a nice honor. And I had all sorts of spiritual help and amazing things. And I got these two whacking great crystals about that big each. And from John of God's own personal mine that he has there. And when I was when I came back to Australia, he told me to sit there in meditation and raise your vibrations. And I did. As soon as I started to do that, all sorts of incredible things opened up for me. And when I came back to Australia, I then decided, well, I'm going to have a go at this, contacting God that I'd spoken to Neil about. So I sat down, meditated with these two crystals, as a male and a female crystal. And just sat there, raised my vibrations, opened my cell phone, started to communicate. Well, Yeah, I got some amazing messages. And when I look at Neil's book again and my own experiences, am I actually speaking to the universe? Am I speaking to an ascended master, a guide, a master guide, which is basically a spokesperson for the universe, a God, and given permission? I don't know. Does it really matter? But I certainly got some amazing little quotes. And I turned one of them into a book, actually. The road to perfection is full of potholes. That really appealed to me. So I titled my first book that, sent it into the publishers, and they said, no, we don't want to publish that, but we will talk to you about the chapter on life after death. So they said, do you want to write a book about that? So I said, oh, all right. You know what it's like with publishers? I jumped at the opportunity, in other words. So that's how afterlife evolved. And but I've still got the past lives, I've still got the road to perfection there. And I'm looking at doing a rewrite on it, actually. So it's still there. So once again, that was another step along the way.
So number seven is Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge by Dr. Stephen Greer. And isn't he having his moment right now?
Yeah, well, this came out pretty early in the piece. Well, what about 7 or 8 years ago, maybe longer? And Stephen Greer, a doctor, he was a well-known surgeon, and gave all this up to contact and use his whole background in UFOs and contacting aliens and all sorts of things. I was, by this stage, well enmeshed in doing radio out there. So I managed to be able to get an interview with him, which is not easy. I had to actually go through his wife to get it. But I got her contact, so she put me onto him and he agreed to do it. So I managed to get a really nice interview with him. And I always believe that was he answered so many questions for me, because that's another area that I'm really interested in, which I go into in my radio program, Radio Out There. And occasionally I'll have all sorts of guests on. And I've had a regular guest from Canada for quite some time, actually. And and Stephen was, I guess, the crown on the jewel in the crown to be able to get his input on the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Do you think we're very far away from admission?
Well, let's put it this way. I think it's got to be not so much even admission. It's whether or not those people who are here as beings, those entities, whatever, are wanting to communicate. And right now, if you were coming from another world, another dimension, whatever, would you want to contact people on the earth right now?
Yeah.
That's the question I'm asking. Yeah. Maybe they're just sort of sitting back and saying, whoa, okay, guys, sort yourselves out, and then we'll get on to the next question. But right now, I think if they came in there and suddenly landed on the steps of the White House or in Forbidden City in Beijing or wherever, you know, there would be, I don't know, you'd just have to sort of imagine what it would be like, but I don't think it'd be the right time.
So book eight is Quantum Consciousness by Peter Smith.
Yeah. Now, this is this next stage on from Michael Newton. And in about 2015, I think it was, I wanted to, 2015, I wanted to contact Michael Newton. I thought, oh, I've got to do an interview with him. So I contacted, sent emails out, did everything. And I finally got an email back from this guy called Peter Smith, who was, pardon me, I'll just take a mouthful of water. And Peter Smith came back to me and said, oh, look, Michael, in an email, Michael is not doing interviews now. He's reached that stage where he just doesn't want to do anything. I'm the international president of the Newton Institute, and I'm happy to talk to you or whatever. It turns out that he lived in Melbourne, even though, of course, Michael Newton is in the United States. So I said, oh, well, okay, fair enough. So I did an interview with Pete, and then I influenced Duncan to put him as a guest speaker on one of the Nexus conferences, and which I'd spoken about with my own books. Pete and I met up. We actually shared a stall together. And since then, we have discovered a friendship, I believe, that goes back many, many lifetimes. And he's helped me tremendously. He's been a tremendous influence in my life. And he was running the Michael Newton Institute workout here of life between lives and whatever. He moved away from that and moved into quantum consciousness. And from then on, I've done a couple of interviews with Pete on my radio program, and he's really focusing on that now. And just before all the COVID stuff came up, he was speaking at conferences in America and doing all sorts of things like that, and wrote this book, which was published by Llewellyn's actually, called Quantum Consciousness, Expanding Your Personal Universe. Now, it's interesting, Sandy, you've probably seen this. There's been a lot about consciousness in the last couple of years. And so many scientists stand up there and say, no, consciousness is all in the brain. It's all in the mind. That's what it is. But now slowly, people, scientists, all sorts of people now are finally coming to the realization that consciousness, that we are consciousness, our soul is our consciousness, if you want to put it in very simple terms. And there are more and more people accepting this now. And I've worked in the last few years emceeing conferences called Cosmic Consciousness Conferences. And the whole area of consciousness here in Australia anyway has certainly taken off. And I think it is the same for you in Britain.
Oh, I think so. Yes, absolutely. I mean, and also I'm seeing so many books coming out where people are talking about consciousness.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So much work being done.
Yeah, well, when you start to then, Peter took this to the next level and delved into quantum consciousness. Now, I'll be quite honest with you here. I've done several interviews with Pete, and I just have to sort of try and ask intelligent questions because it's pretty deep. And when we start getting into the quantum area, so if I can just quote you off the back of the book here that says, consciousness, we're a window to dynamic and unfolding universal journey. Simply put, we're a human portal waiting to be released into the fabric of the cosmos itself. So when we go into the whole area of the quantum consciousness, we're talking about parallel lives. We're talking about lives in other dimensions, all sorts of things like that. And this is where it gets really deep. So once again, that has changed. And I think I wanted to include that book because Peter has had such a huge influence on me. He's regressed me several times, which I talk about in my book, Past Lives Unveiled. And he's taken me back. And one of the lives he took me back to, a past life, was one out of body in another time, dimension, universe. I'm not quite sure, but it's another aspect of myself where I describe, and I went into all this detail, quite amazing. When I read it back afterwards, when I listened to the tape back afterwards, I was in a very deep hypnotic state. I listened back and I said, oh, did I really say all of that? So I've put that very much in context in my book. But that to me was an example of what quantum consciousness is. And as Pete says, we have many different lives on many different worlds. All this nonsense about thinking, you know, the Earth is the center of the universe. I mean, how arrogant to think that our world here would be the center of a universe. Give me a break.
Yeah.
So once again, Peter has had a huge impact on me. And that was why I wanted to include his book in the top 10 here, because it's that whole area has opened up something for me too when I had my own experience of moving into a parallel life, a parallel universe, another dimension. I just don't want to put a label on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the amount of research and the amount of information that's also coming through now about consciousness. It's going into realms where we in our physical form, you know, with our left hemisphere that wants to make sense of everything, we can't make sense of it. We can't.
No, of course
it's impossible. Yeah.
No. Of course we can't. But do we need to? Do we need? I think there are certain things at some stage we need to accept.
Yeah.
And if we can accept even basic things like we're not a body with a soul, we're actually energy, indestructible energy, a soul using a spirit as a vehicle, attaching itself to a human body to have a human experience. Once you can accept that as a very basic tenet of life itself, then you can go on. But you don't need to sort of have to delve into the whole thing, beyond reading my books, of course, to be able to accept that. And I think that that's just one of many principles in life that we can accept, providing intuitively that we can feel that we're just the right thing. And yeah, sure, question things, very much so. But there are certain things you think, yeah, that really does make sense. And I don't know whether I can explain it. And if I really want to, I can go and do some research. But yeah, in the meantime, that does make sense to me.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the understanding, you know, is not important. It's the resonance that tells you more.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, that's Pete's book, Quantum Consciousness, which is, if people want to get hold of it, it's available through Llewellyn in
I'm going to make a note of that one. That's one I'd like to have a look at.
Pete would be a wonderful guest for you on your program. He's very, very good. Great speaker. Lovely, lovely guy.
I'll add him to the list I'm going to send you.
Enough.
Okay, so number 9 is Conversations with G, A Physician's Encounter with Heaven, Dr. Norman Shealy.
Dr. Norm Shealy. What a delightful man. Absolutely delightful. For those people who might think, yeah, I know that name, Norm Shealy was the doctor who works or used to work with Carolyn Mace. She was a medical intuitive and she would then send them off to Norm. Norm started off life as a neurosurgeon and then he's sort of advanced, educated himself, opened up spiritually, and now he runs, and he's in his late 80s, he runs this wellness center in Missouri, and he's just an amazing man. I found out about him when I was researching for my book, Past Lives Unveiled, and I did some research and found out that Norm had a previous life where he was a doctor in Great Britain in the latter part of the 19th century, around the time of Charles Dickens. In fact, he knew Charles Dickens. And I won't go into it because it's a long story, but I've given the whole details in my book. And he proved beyond doubt that he was a doctor called Dr. John Elliotson in Britain in the late 19th century. And Dr. John Elliotson introduced the stethoscope into Britain, by the way, from France, and various other things like this. He also used to use a lot of, not hypnotherapy, mesmerism, and also various drugs. Now, in this lifetime, Norm has realized that he came back again to be a doctor so he could move on and complete the work he started off as John Elliotson back in the 19th century. And so many correlations between Norm in this lifetime and Elliotson in the last lifetime. It's not coincidence. It's just one piece of synchronicity after another. And he identified this, and it helped him in his transformation as well to open up from being a strict mainstream medicine neurosurgeon to be able to go in there and open up totally into spiritual areas. Just some amazing things. So I contacted, and I got Norm's permission to actually use the story of John Elliotson in my book, and we connected. He sent me his book, and I've got it here. It's called Conversations. Keep forgetting where the camera is. Conversations with G by Norm Shealy. Once again, that is a great book. And what have I marked here? Because there are so many things I wanted to pick up. But oh yes, he connected and opened up to his guide, which he just calls G. G for guide. And G has changed his life. Now, how many neurosurgeons do you know that allow guides to come in and influence their lives? I can't think of any others, can you? So there we are. So, but he did so many different forms of things with this, and G proving himself to Norm did things like, and look, I've got to read you this little bit here. Just absolutely lovely here. Where is it? Oh, yes. In November 94, when I went to put a tape into my recorder, the tape vanished before my eyes. I went downstairs to get another tape, and as I was about to put the new tape into the recorder, the original one dropped onto the floor in front of me. I asked G if he could make the building disappear, to which he replied, yes, but it would cause too much of a stir. So all of these things his guide, who's obviously a very advanced guide, was doing to demonstrate to Norm that he was actually a guide and he was helping him. And it just goes on and on. That's just one of the little stories in there. But the whole thing, he does have conversations with the other side and just emerges. And oh, the other one that I had a quote here too. In fact, I've made a note of this about astrology. And he does talk about the, for those who are astrologers, that each of the houses in astrology has an appropriate association with an aspect of the human body and human condition. So there's so many other things there, Sandy, in that book. As I said, I gave you 10 books, but not in any necessarily in any order. And that was just one I really wanted to put in there.
Yeah.
I did an interview with Norm a couple of years ago now. Delightful man. Absolutely delightful.
I've heard that about him. Yeah. Mm. So your last book is a work of fiction, The Three Yes. Musketeers. What's Yes. that doing there?
Well, when I was a kid, my father had a leather-bound library of all Alexandre Dumas' books. And when I got into my teens, I started to read them. And, of course, what was the first one I read? The Three Musketeers. And then I read The Count of Monte Cristo and some Son of Porthos and all sorts of other books that are there. And I've still got the leather-bound editions there sitting in my library. I would never get rid of them. They were my father's and I sort of inherited them. What it did for me was to introduce me to historical fiction. Now, I've always been a bit of a history buff. At school, I majored in ancient and modern history. And I even toured at one stage doing a university course in archaeology and becoming an archaeologist. But life took over and I moved in another direction because I couldn't get to the lectures to be able to get the degree while I was working on radio. So I figured the universe didn't want me to be an archaeologist in this lifetime. But having this love of history, it's been exacerbated by reading books and starting off with The Three Musketeers. I love historical fiction. So much of it is based on actual events. And if you can read between the lines with some authors, it's there. They're using actual events. And okay, yes, they're changing and putting a few characters in, but there's a lot to be learned there. And I just love, you can't read nonfiction books all the time. And I like to be able to go to bed late at night with a good book of fiction and finish the day on that, where I can disappear off somewhere. And historical fiction is one of my very favourites.
You know, occasionally I like historical fiction too, and, you know, nonfiction. But I've read a few books over the years that obviously are relating to things yeah. that happened historically. Yeah. And the amount of detail there, you yeah. have to. You find yourself thinking, there's some channeling going on there. It's not just yes, somebody's imagination. Right. They're channeling right. information, yeah. you know, that they yeah. knew, that perhaps they lived that life.
Exactly, exactly. And I have had a couple of past life regressions myself and gone back into very interesting historical times that I had studied, like ancient Greece and Rome and whatever, and gone back into those. Even though I thought I was going to go back and discover my life in ancient Egypt, I didn't go there at all. I went into other areas that I had studied at school back in about the 18th century. I think I was at school. It feels like that these days. But, yeah, so historical fiction, historical, anything historical, I just love it. I look at programs on documentaries and everything like that. We've got a channel called SBS Television, Special Broadcasting Services, and they run all of the documentaries, the ancient Egypt, Pompeii, the whole lot, and they're all made in Britain. So I watch them religiously. I love them.
Yes, that's what I do quite a bit too. I've just been watching some of the latest research on the Maya and Chichen Itza. I mean, fascinating stuff. Especially now when you see they've got the technology and they have these big, you know, landscapes in front of them taken from the air, and it's just, you know, nothing but vegetation. And then they can strip away the vegetation. Show you what's underneath. Incredible.
I was reading the other day that they discovered recently that I've just had a brain fade here. The one in South America. And that it was Machu Picchu. Total brain fade there. I couldn't get to Machu Picchu because they had a strike on the trains when I was in Peru. But the research shows now that it wasn't a city. It was actually a country resort for the king at that particular time. So there was a discovery that was only made very recently. I thought, well, that was interesting. Mm. Little things like that just keep turning up, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. And this is where technology is doing a wonderful thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So at this point, we normally ask people what they're reading now. Now, I know that you're probably reading a lot of books because you do a lot of shows, but what are you reading now that is really, really grabbing you?
Oh, I'll grab this one here because this person is going to be a guest, my next guest on radio out there. I've just finished reading the book and doing an interview with her. Her name is Kimberly Meredith, and it's called Awakening to the Fifth Dimension. Now, that has only, in fact, it's not even coming out. It was supposed to come out in September, the end of September, but it's now been delayed. So I've done an interesting interview with her, and she's talking about the fifth dimension and how, where we can go and open up and some of the answers to things that are going on around us at the present stage. So that's a very interesting one, discovering the soul's path to healing. And she has turned from being into a medical intuitive and a healer, and she's doing some amazing work. She's based in Los Angeles, and she's doing some incredible work there. But she's opened up and doing spiritual healing, and she does long distance healing and everything like that. So I've got her to promise me that if I have a horrible problem, she'll reach out from Los Angeles and heal me.
It's good to have friends like that, isn't it?
Well, she said I don't do the healing, but she's just the messenger.
Yes.
But that's just one of them that I'm reading. I've got bunches of them just sitting out through the doors just behind me. There's a pile of them I've only just finished reading Awakening to the Fifth Dimension. So the next one I start tomorrow.
Okay, so tell us about the book that you're working on yourself. You've mentioned that you are working on another book. Can you talk about it?
No, don't want to at the moment.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Now, it's just that several things have emerged. It is part of the story of spiritual. It's about spiritual awakening and various things like that. But there's a lot sort of there, and I'm just a bit sort of at that stage at the moment where I'm not ready to talk about it. Sorry about that.
That's all right. When you are, come on the show, the radio show, and you can tell us all about it then.
All right.
So, you know, we said at the beginning that sometimes when you hear your bio being read, it makes you realise some of the things that you've done that you've just taken in your stride and forgotten about. When you look back over your life and the turns that it's taken, what do you think? You know, I mean, you started off wanting to be probably one thing and ended up having this incredible career, and it's taken you into areas that you could never have conceived.
Yeah. All right. I'll confess. All right. Only between you and me, Sandy, all right?
Okay. I won't tell anyone else.
Okay. My book is my memoirs.
Ah. Okay. There you go.
I think
I must have picked up on that.
Work that one out there, and you were putting me into a corner, weren't you?
Wow. How psychic am I? It is. I mean, it is a fascinating thing, isn't it? Life that you know, we think we're going down one path, and suddenly a book falls off a shelf, and now we take a right turn somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I've been persuaded to do it, and it's amazing when you start looking back on your own life and the things that happen, and all of a sudden something will happen, and it'll be a click. You know, a little bell will go off. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Forgotten about it. Years and years. And then there it is. So I think we've got so much lurking away at the back of our mind, our subconscious and whatever, that, yes, it is good. And it doesn't matter. I mean, I may or may not even find a publisher who's even vaguely interested in publishing it. But if not, I'll just do a self-publication and just do it for my own family. And it's good. And it can be cathartic. It can be just something there for those loved ones, the near and dear, to be able to have to look back after you disappear back to the afterlife and say, oh, is that what the old bugger was doing? Yeah, right, okay. So,
of all the things that you've done,
yeah,
what are you most proud of? What is it that gives you the most pleasure, the most fun, the most reward?
That's like saying, what's your favourite film?
You clearly love doing the interviews. You've been doing them a long time.
Yeah, I have. And I guess meeting people like that and interviewing and communicating, that's a whole generic thing, I suppose, that it covers many, many different areas. I mean, over the course of my life, I've interviewed probably thousands of people, and I just love doing it. And in recent years, I've had to learn how to be interviewed, which is a totally different thing, as you know.
Yeah.
So I guess communicating and meeting people, whether it be over the telephone or sometimes on TV or whatever, that is probably one of the things. And to be able to share that with an audience and not always knowing how many people are out there and not even worrying. And then when you get a nice bit of feedback somewhere along the line that people are saying, you know, how much they got out of that. That and writing a book. I'd always wanted to write a book. That was something that once I was able to write my first book, which turned out to be unexpectedly a bestseller and is still, I mean, I got the royalty check yesterday, still selling really well all around the world, which is, so I think people are interested in the afterlife. And to be able to do that, because I got a strong message from Spirit that I was one of many people around the planet who were selected to help spread the word about the afterlife, to take the fear out of so-called death. And so that was a wonderful, wonderful feeling, not only to write and have a book published, but also to know, and I've had so much good feedback about that. So that is probably, you know, the most personally satisfying one thing that I've done, is to be able to go from being a person on radio, TV. I've done a few appearances in films and stage shows and things as well. But to do that has been an enormous satisfaction in life.
Mm. So you regard your books as your legacy?
I never thought of it like that, but I suppose so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think about legacies. But, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, Barry, before we close, can you tell viewers where they can find out more about you and your books and your radio show?
Well, if they go onto my radio website, that's the best way, because my bio is there and a little bit about each of my books. It's Radio Out There, three words but all joined together, Radio Out There, all squeezed together. .com, quite simple. If you forget that, just Google Barry Eaton, E-A-T-O-N, and it will come up with Radio Out There. On there, there's my biog, and there's also details about the books. I've written three books on my own, and I wrote another one with my partner, Anne, who you know well, of course, too, Tandy. And it's just wonderful. And there's a little blurb about each one of them on the website there, so if you want to find out more about that.
And the conferences, I mean, you do, you know, host and MC some great conferences. At the moment, we're reading in the world news that, you know, Australia really is very tightly locked. When do you think that you might be organising the next conference or hosting?
I was about to say God only knows, but it's unfortunately the politicians are the only ones that know.
Yeah.
I saw a meme the other day that a doctor said, when he was asked, when do you think the pandemic is going to be over? He said, don't ask me. He said, I'm just a doctor. Got to ask a politician.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. It's a shame they're so far away because they always look so inviting, so well worth attending.
Yeah, no, they are. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. The last I've done Afterlife and also the Cosmic Consciousness one. I also did another one a couple of years ago, the Secret Life of Australia, which was a wonderful story about our Indigenous past and how our First Nation people weren't the bunch of savages that the Britons thought they were when they came out here and colonised Australia back at the end of the 18th century. That they had an organized civilization. Yeah, they didn't have cities, but they did have organized culture. They had organized agriculture. So that was a fascinating conference to do that. But when the next one is, gee, I wish I knew. Mm-hmm. But I'm open, ready to compare, ready to MC it whenever. I also speak at the conferences, by the way. So not only MC, but also speak, give my own talks here.
Well, Barry Eaton, thank you. It's been a real pleasure as always, and we're really grateful to you for adding your 10 best spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations.
Well, thank you, Sandy. It's been an honour, and I know that, you know, you've done some tremendous work on this because we spoke about this before you even started it, and I thought, what a great idea. So to be here as your guest, knowing the success you've been having and the people you've had and the people you're going to get, thank you for inviting me. I've loved every minute of it.
Oh, I love every single one. They're the most fun I've ever done when it comes to interviews, really. Yeah. They're just so rewarding, wonderful. Yeah. So thank you, Barry. And this is going to be out as a podcast as well on all the big podcast platforms. And so it'll get seen and heard far and wide.
Lovely.
Thank you, Barry. And thank you at home for joining us. You can see previous videos in this series on our YouTube channel, as well as on the video page at the NoBSSpiritualBookClub.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter and be the first to know who's coming up next. And you can download all of these interviews as podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, Amazon, Audible, and probably all of the others. That brings us to the end of this week's show. I hope you'll join me again at the same time next week for another episode of the No BS Spiritual Book Club's Face to Face with Video Series. Till then, it's goodbye from me.